Hey, good morning, members. It's a big day today. I know it's MAP Day. So I'm going to call our Human Services, Finance, and Policy Committee to order. Ms. Hansen, can you please take the roll?
Of course. Good morning. Chair Schultz?
Present.
Vice Chair Bonner?
Present.
Thank you. Lead Albright is excused today. Representative Bolden?
Present.
Representative Burkle is also excused. Representative Fisher?
Fisher, present.
Representative Frederick?
Present.
Representative Hansen?
Present.
Representative Keel?
Present.
Representative Liebling?
Present.
Thank you. Representative Mueller?
Present.
Representative Noir?
Present.
Representative Novotny?
Present.
Representative Pearson?
Pearson, present.
Representative Pinto?
Present.
Representative Rasmussen?
Rasmussen, present.
Thank you. Representative Robbins? Representative Sandel? And Representative Schumacher?
Schumacher, present.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Hansen. I believe we have a quorum. Let's see. The next item is approving the minutes from February 10th. Vice Chair Bonner, would you like to move to approve the minutes?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move the minutes from February 10th of 2022.
Thank you. Is there any corrections or discussion of those minutes? Not seeing anything. All those in favor of approving the minutes from February 10th, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, the minutes are approved. Okay, members, today we have three bills on our agenda. The first bill is a Senate file, which is similar to the House file 3267. So we're going to take up Senate file 2774. And I think the only difference was there was a technical amendment in the Senate. This is the disability waiver rate setting recodification bill, which was processed on the floor yesterday. So I'm going to make a motion to re-refer Senate file 2774 to be placed on the general register as recommended. And for especially for our new members, really this is just a reorganizing a statute 256B.4914. It doesn't change the meaning or the effect of any provisions. It just makes it much easier for our House nonpartisan staff and the House and Senate to make any changes when we bring bills forward that amends that statute. We're going to have House research staff Danielle Pinelli describe the recodification bill. Ms. Pinelli, are you with us? There you are.
Yes, Madam Chair. As Representative Schultz said, House file 3267, Senate file 2774 is the disability waiver rate system recodification bill. As some of you might remember, last year in the Health and Human Services Omnibus Finance Bill, there was a revisor's instruction that was included in that bill that instructed the revisor to do a recodification of this section of statute. The way that that revisor instruction was written, it was initially supposed to be done editorially by the revisor's office staff, but after session was over, upon further reflection, the revisor's office decided that there were too many changes that needed to be made for them to be able to do it under their editorial authority. And so they talked to Senate counsel and I about putting a bill together in order to do this recodification. So that's what this bill is the result of that work that we've done over the interim to just reorganize the statutes to make it more transparent, easier to amend. In addition to the reorganization, we also made changes to terminology to make terminology more consistent throughout. And we tried to make the basic format of the rate calculations for each service under the disability waiver rate system more consistent. And then we also included some housekeeping items from the Department of Human Services, like modifying some of the employment classification names and updating the SOC codes and also updating some of the component values to match their values as of December 31st of 2021. This isn't intended to change DWRS policy or rate calculations at all. It's supposed to be just a reorganization and cleaning up of the statute. And then as Representative Schultz mentioned, there was a technical amendment that was adopted in the other body that was just some technical suggestions that were suggested by the revisor's office staff when they processed the bill when they were jacketing it.
Thank you, Ms. Pinelli. Are there any questions or comments from members on Senate File 2774? Chair Liebling.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to thank Ms. Pinelli. This is, I don't know if members maybe have been through this before, but this is a tremendous amount of work. And our staff are so busy. And Ms. Pinelli, thank you very much for doing this. These kinds of recodifications really help all of us in the future to read the statutes and understand better what they say. So thank you.
Yeah, I'll second that. Thank you, Ms. Pinelli. We should also thank Mr. Monahan in the Senate. I know you worked with him on this language. So, and I know we are probably going to have at least one more recod bill coming to this committee that they've also worked on. Any other questions or comments? Okay, I'm not seeing anything. So I'll renew my motion to re-refer 2774 to be placed on the general register. And this is a roll call, members. Ms. Hansen, can you take the roll call, please?
Yes. Chair Schultz.
Aye.
Chair Schultz, aye. Vice Chair Bonner?
Aye.
Bonner, aye. Albright, excused. Representative Bolden?
Aye.
Bolden, aye. Representative Burkles, also excused. Representative Fisher?
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Representative Frederick?
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Representative Hansen?
Hansen, aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Keel?
Keel, aye.
Keel, aye. Representative Liebling?
Liebling, aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative Mueller?
Aye.
Mueller, aye. Representative Noor?
Aye.
Noor, aye. Representative Novotny?
Novotny, aye.
Novotny, aye. Representative Pearson?
Pearson, aye.
Pearson, aye. Thank you. Representative Pinto?
Aye.
Pinto, aye. Representative Rasmussen?
Rasmussen, aye.
Rasmussen, aye. Representative Robbins?
Aye.
Robbins, aye. Representative Sandell, I don't think we have yet. Excused. Representative Schumacher?
Schumacher, aye.
Schumacher, aye. Chair Schultz, that's 16 ayes and 3 excused.
Thank you, Ms. Hansen. So the motion passes and Senate File 2774 will be put on the general registry. So members, the next bill we have before us is House File 2840. This bill will just be laid over for possible inclusion in our Human Services Finance Bill. And we have Representative Mueller. Can you please maybe introduce your bill, describe it, and then we'll go to testifiers and then take questions. Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So yes, House File 2840 is a bill brought by the Volunteers of America, and they have a Center for Excellence in Supported Decision Making. They're here today and they'll talk about the need for grant funding to help with their work assisting older adults and people with disabilities work with individuals and their caregivers to avoid unnecessary guardianships and help them navigate complex systems. A couple of years ago, we passed legislation that modernizes our guardianship statutes, recognizing the movement towards supported decision making. Guardianship is a complex system, one that isn't right for many people or for every person, but it is often the default. And that's why I'm happy to carry this bill to support the work of the Volunteers of America in helping people navigate the system and utilize supported decision making where appropriate. And with that, Madam Chair, I have two testifiers here today.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. So the first testifier I have is Julie Manworn from Volunteers of America. Please introduce yourself for the record and then begin your testimony.
Thank you, Chairwoman Schultz, members of the committee, and Representative Mueller. My name is Julie Mann Warren. It's M-A-N-W-O-R-R-E-N. And I serve as the president and CEO for Volunteers of America of Minnesota and Wisconsin. We truly appreciate your service to Minnesota and this opportunity to join you today. We are here to request your support for funding to sustain an essential resource for Minnesota families and individuals. Volunteers of America, also known as VOA, is one of Minnesota's leading nonprofit providers of health and human services. VOA partners with individuals and families of all ages, people who feel they are without hope or the resources that they need to move forward. Minnesotans who can be underestimated by their community and often even by themselves. We are proud to work with Minnesotans, helping them to build hope, resilience, and well-being. We have done this for 125 years in Minnesota. Today, VOA provides a wide range of essential services statewide, including affordable housing, behavioral health care, education, community reentry from prison, supports for older adults, and services for individuals with disabilities. It is my pleasure to introduce Anita Raymond, Program Director of the Center for Excellence in Supported Decision Making, Care Management, and Consultation Services.
Anita. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Mann Warren, and also members and members of the public. There is an excellent slide deck on our committee website that describes VOA if you need more information. So the next testifier I have is Anita Raymond. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Schultz and committee members. My name is Anita Raymond, R-A-Y-M-O-N-D, and it is my honor to tell you more about the importance of our work in guiding families and professionals who support adults living with decision-making challenges due to neurocognitive disorders, intellectual or developmental disabilities, and psychiatric conditions. With Representative Mueller's leadership in 2020, changes to Minnesota's guardianship law enhanced the Bill of Rights for people subject to guardianship. It added requirements for guardians to notify families of changes in the person's situation. It provided a supported decision-making definition and strengthened requirements for exploring less restrictive alternatives prior to petitioning for guardianship. In Minnesota, the spectrum of decision-making options is wide, but also potentially confusing and stressful to already complicated care and support situations for those concerned about a person's safety and well-being, while also seeking to honor individual rights and choices. Legal requirements and complicated situations can leave families feeling lost and uncertain of how to find the best fit for their situation. The Center for Excellence in Supported Decision Making provides that clarity and guidance to more than 1,000 individuals, families, and professionals a year through our statewide guardianship information line, our virtual drop-in guardianship information clinics, and our direct social work and legal representation with individuals and families. We assist these families and individuals to understand their rights, the systems they find themselves in, and provide guidance or direct facilitation in completion of legal documents, such as powers of attorney and healthcare directives, in addition to guardianship and conservatorship arrangements, all of this regardless of ability to pay. We help connect people struggling with their guardianship situations to offices of ombudsman for long-term care and mental health and developmental disabilities. We guide them toward finding solutions or reporting problems to Minnesota's adult protective services systems or the courts. Our team is available to families and professionals to explain these complicated systems and provide guidance and information to ensure they know their options and can seek the right-sized approach, the best fit for their individual situations. Families and professionals report that they value our services as the first of multiple calls they've already made that can finally explain to them the options and choices they face with clarity. They feel heard and understood. They report reduced stress and find help from knowledgeable staff in prioritizing issues and figuring out their next steps. A couple examples I'd like to share, a comment from one caller to our information line shared, I've been so stressed. I've been developing an ulcer for 5 months now. Thank you for helping to sort through this and put me at ease. About 40% of our callers are professionals trying to find more information to help them in providing services and supports to the people they serve. The following comment is just one of many that shows the values to professionals as well. The information I received was very helpful for the individuals I'm trying to assist in finding the right fit. I greatly appreciate the comprehensive overview and detailed assistance. We help individuals and families seeking to terminate a guardianship that is no longer necessary, like the family of a young man we've been working with who was placed under guardianship when he turned 18. Years later, he and his family wanted to terminate the guardianship, feeling it was now overly protective from where his current situation was, but they were nervous about possible pushback from the court and others. So they sought assistance from our team to explore the promise of supported decision making, to help build their case to the court, and then building supports to enable the young man to be independent where he is able to be, while benefiting from assistance in a few areas where he still needs it. And we can obtain the protection of a guardianship when the vulnerabilities and incapacities of the person cannot be resolved in any other way, like the older woman living with dementia, victimized by scammers and unable to understand how to deal with her broken furnace in the middle of winter and other daily struggles. A skilled guardian and conservator that we put in place through petitioning the court was able to help her remain safely at home much longer. And when that was no longer possible, facilitated a smooth, stress-free transition to an enhanced long-term care living setting. We also support families and professionals to understand both the protections that guardianship offers, as well as the limitations of guardianship, to help them decide for themselves if the hassles and costs of guardianship are outweighed by the potential benefits of pursuing this intervention, while educating them on possible alternatives to guardianship and helping them decide the best approach for them. We are also driving systems change, providing hundreds of hours of education and training to thousands of Minnesotans and community members, professionals and community members throughout Minnesota. The center collaborates with Department of Human Services, Minnesota Elder Justice Center, the Ombudsman Offices, the ARC Minnesota, Lutheran Social Services, private legal and fiduciary professionals, advocacy organizations, health systems, and the courts. Individually, we collaborate and through our facilitation of Minnesota's working interdisciplinary network of guardianship stakeholders to seek legal and policy changes and best practice approaches to address decision-making issues across disciplines. Our work has continued thus far with the help of state and federal grants and miscellaneous revenue sources. However, without a more stable and consistent funding stream, the Center for Excellence in Supported Decision Making is at real risk of closing. This funding would ensure that we can help meet the expanding needs of Minnesotans to access the knowledgeable, centralized source of information and guidance around guardianship and the full decision-making options through our attorney and social service professionals who understand how to partner, navigate, and guide families and professionals through court, county, legal, special education, healthcare, and social service systems. We use person-centered approaches that understand the importance of balancing safety with self-determination and quality of life. We ask for your support in passing House File 2840. As Chair Schultz mentioned, you have been provided a handout with more details, and I'm happy to expand upon this and answer any questions anyone might have. Thank you, Representative Mueller, Chair Schultz, and committee members for this opportunity to ask for your support.
Thank you, Ms. Raymond. And I believe the appropriation is $600,000 that's being requested. Is that correct, Representative Mueller?
That is, Madam Chair, each year.
Each year. Okay. Anything to add to that, Representative Mueller, before we go to questions?
No. Thank you, Chair Schultz.
Okay. Are there any questions or comments from members? I am not seeing any. Any final words, Representative Mueller?
Well, I'll just add, Madam Chair, that hearing Ms. Raymond speak really reminds me of the information we heard about Minnesota's aging population and how necessary this is, especially now in light of the fact that we've got an aging, you know, population as well. So anyway, thank you so much to the testifiers today, and thanks to members for your support of this bill.
Yes, thank you for all the work you're doing at VOA. We really appreciate it. So members, again, this House File 2840 is going to get laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. So we are now going to move on to our next and last item on the agenda, which is House File 1383, which is before us. And this bill will also get laid over for possible inclusion in our finance omnibus bill. So let's see, we have Representative Cagle. Are you here with us? Oh, I'm sorry. I'm going to move that. There's an A1 amendment. She's not quite with us yet, but we can go to testifiers first. But there is an A1 amendment that I will move, and all it does is updates the dates, the years, to put this in the right format. So my motion is to move the A1 amendment. This can be a voice vote, and the bill is before us. All those in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, the motion is adopted. The amendment is adopted. So we'll go to testifiers first. The first person we have is Carmeet Bowman. Are you with us? I'm not seeing this testifier. Okay, Sally Newberry, are you with us to testify to House File 1383?
Good morning.
Welcome
Thank
to
you,
the committee, Ms. Newberry. Please introduce yourself and then proceed with your testimony.
Yes, thank you so much. We appreciate this opportunity. My name is Sally Newberry, and I'm the Public Policy Chair with the Minnesota Alliance for Volunteer Advancement, or MAVA. And we have a volunteerism bill that we are presenting today and like to talk to you a little bit about it. So my public policy members of MAVA, many of them were not able to join us today, but I have their testimonies to present to you. From Marley Melby, she is the Senior Programs Director at Tri-Valley Opportunity Council in Crookston, Minnesota. In rural Minnesota, the pandemic has hit communities and families hard, and our organization continues to work to address current and changing needs throughout and during the recovery of the COVID-19 pandemic. Our volunteer-driven programs are a part of bridging the gap for underserved families and individuals. Tri-Valley's Rural Transportation Collaborative, Caring Companion, and Foster Grandparent volunteers have contributed over 70,000 hours mentoring and tutoring students towards academic success and school readiness through intergenerational relationships, providing companionship while assisting with daily needs and socialization to homebound seniors who run the risk of isolation to remain in their own homes, and providing one-on-one curbside transportation to local and long-distance medical and essential appointments. The Tri-Valley volunteers have saved Minnesota schools, daycares, businesses, and healthcare organizations roughly $2 million in staff salaries. Tri-Valley volunteers have traveled almost 600,000 miles towards achieving individual, family, and student success, sustainability, and independence in 13 counties in greater Minnesota, where small communities lack resources that provide opportunities for communities to thrive. The Tri-Valley volunteers have saved Minnesota schools and daycares, businesses, and healthcare organizations roughly $400,000 in travel costs and mileage reimbursement. The agency is struggling to meet the needs of communities and families impacted during the pandemic needs the volunteerism bill, and the people in rural Minnesota need the volunteerism bill. We need you to commit to an investment in innovative volunteer engagement. The bill will bring essential resources to address growing community needs and aid in the recovery of rural communities from the COVID-19 pandemic. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Newberry. And I see Representative Cagle is now with us. Welcome to the committee, Representative. We did move the amendment, so we did update the dates, but we went ahead to the testifier. And now maybe if you could describe the bill and why it's important for us to fund. I believe it's a $1 million request for appropriation.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and apologize for being a bit late, you know, bouncing between Zoom meetings right now. So what this bill does is it appropriates $1 million to the Minnesota Association for Volunteer Administration. And I'd just like to kind of share a little bit about my experience with the organization. In my previous life, I was a volunteer coordinator for a couple different organizations. And the volunteers of those organizations, both nonprofits, really helped us expand our capacity of our organization. One of the organizations I worked for, Eastside Learning Center, was 90% volunteered driven. And so we had people coming into the building every day to do reading, tutoring with children. And so the volunteers were the lifeblood of that organization. And when I started with MAVA, just kind of as a group of like-minded people in the same kind of weird space of professional volunteer administrators, which is kind of funny, you're a professional, you know, to help get volunteers in your organization. And so it's a really great place for kind of this unique job position where there's usually only one of us in an organization, if that, to come together and really share ways to best practices, expand our capacity as a nonprofit. And so I think that's really at the crux of this bill is that Minnesota is known as a state of volunteerism. We are always at the top of our game when it comes to volunteers. And we saw that, you know, especially during COVID, making sure that we get meals to people in their homes, that we were able to get groceries and medicine to people. And I was able to work with Representative Mecklen at the very beginning of COVID to really make sure that these organizations that have volunteers servicing our people in their homes and in our communities, that they're able to have continue to build that capacity so that all Minnesotans can be, you know, touched in some way or another by volunteerism. And so that's just kind of my little story behind why this bill means so much to me. And with MAVA's help and support, you know, I was really able to expand our volunteer program at both organizations. You know, we became a service enterprise organization, which a lot of you might be aware, when you go to donate to a nonprofit, there's a seal saying this is a good nonprofit to donate your money to. Well, the service enterprise is exactly that, but donating your time. And so if you see an organization that's service enterprise certified, you know that they are going to be using your time wisely. And so maybe that's a little bit more of an explanation than you guys need, but just very much a meaningful bill to me. So thank you so much for hearing it.
Thank you, Representative Cagle. And it's my understanding that this appropriation would go to the Minnesota Association for Volunteer Administration to then administer sub-grants to really under-resourced other nonprofits in greater Minnesota. And those nonprofits would be doing work to really address the needs of that community, any disparities in food insecurity or homelessness or education gaps. So that's my understanding. And I know you've had this bill submitted many years. And so I'm glad we're able to give it a hearing today. Representative Keel, looks like you have your hand up.
There we go. Thank you, Chair Schultz. And I have a few questions. First of all, I was flabbergasted, Sally, when you said Marley Melby. I watched Marley grow up and known her since she was born. So, but I also know that she hasn't reached out to me, and I do happen to know that she's out of town right now. So I'll ask her some questions. I'm very familiar with Tri-Valley and that service, but when this $1 million goes to sub-grants, is any of this going to be addressed or funded in MAVA itself of the $1 million? Would that be just the sub-grants, or is there some administrative costs?
Ms. Newberry?
Yes, thank you, Representative Keel. I appreciate that question. So our plan is 10% for administrative costs would remain with MAVA, but the remaining 90% would go to nonprofit organizations throughout Minnesota, and primarily Greater Minnesota, to support volunteer structure and really enhance our volunteer opportunities and really build on really serving our communities that have been affected by COVID.
Thank you. Can I ask, so how many organizations would MAVA be addressing in that, or currently assisting right now in Minnesota?
Ms. Newberry?
So within Minnesota, we have about 400 members of MAVA. And so it would be an incredible outreach to all the organizations that we've worked with and beyond.
Representative Keel?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that. So 10% seems like a lot to me, especially when you're talking about 400 groups. But I also know that Tri-Valley does get some federal grants too, or is funded by federally. So how much of that money would come federally to manage those grants also, or is this just entirely a sub-grant from Minnesota?
Ms. Newberry?
That would be from Minnesota.
Okay. Representative Keel?
Okay, so there's this program likely is supported in other areas, but this portion of it is, the million would be just a Minnesota dollar, correct?
Yes, just Minnesota dollars.
And okay. Madam Chair.
Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Keel, a lot of that federal money is, when organizations get some of that federal money, it's very prescriptive on what they can use it for. So sometimes capacity building for volunteer programs isn't allowed in some of those federal block grants or some of those programs.
Representative Keel.
Thank you, Representative Cagle. Yeah, I am aware of that. Actually, my husband was a volunteer when I was down in St. Paul, because they looked for somebody and they asked him if he would do it for a little bit. So he was involved in it. So, and I see it has a lot of pluses. I am concerned about some of the area where it goes, but I can ask Marley and we'll talk to her about the in Tri-Valley. So I understand that the volunteerism is important. However, it's just as important for the volunteers as it is for the services they're providing, because a lot of these people are very dedicated to the group they volunteer to. So I know, just from members' information, I know in some cases it is just to cover their expenses. For some people, it doesn't matter. And for others, they wouldn't be able to do it if they didn't have the funds to be paid for their time, they volunteer. So I am aware of that part of it, but it has, I have mixed feelings about this request. However, it does have some interesting supportive systems for senior citizens who spend a lot of time with young children in school or in different ways. So it is a real connection to the community too. So thank you very much.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Keel, I think one of the coolest things that I did it when I was working with MAVA is a return on volunteer investment. And so for our organization, we were able to actually put in the amount of money, time, labor, all that kind of stuff into a, you know, an ROI and show how much actual dollars the volunteers were giving to our organization. And I think at one point we had something like $200,000 worth of services that volunteers were administering our program. So it's a really cool model that allows us to get a lot of return on our investment.
Mm-hmm. Representative Keel, anything else?
No, thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Well, thanks for your questions and comments. And Representative Cagle, thanks for bringing this bill forward. You know, with the workforce shortage crisis, I think we need more volunteers now than ever before. So I really do encourage people in the public to reach out and see if you can provide volunteer services in any of your local community nonprofits and organizations. Representative Cagle, any closing remarks? I do not believe we have any other testifiers here. Do we have any other testifiers? I know we have a list, but I'm not sure they could join us today.
Ms.
Newberry?
I'm sorry. Yes, Chair Schultz, I do have a testimony from another one of our Public Policy Committee members that I'd like to read to you if you don't mind.
Sure, go ahead, Ms. Newberry.
Okay. And so this is from my friend Annette Duncan. She's the president of the United Way of Steele County. And she says, thank you very much for taking the time to consider this bill. Our motto at United Way is Live United. The work we do every day is to impact the lives of individuals and families in Steele County. Would not be possible without volunteers. When we were hit with COVID-19, we knew that our nonprofits would be struggling and that we needed to step up our support to ensure that every person that needed services during this time and beyond had access. We asked our nonprofits, what can we do to help you to fulfill your mission? And they said, one, we need funding. Two, we need more new volunteers because our many existing volunteers are part of the at-risk populations and can't volunteer with us. And three, we need help marketing our programs so that those who have never had to use our services before will know how to access them. We are pleased to report that because of the small seed grant that we received from MAVA that allowed us to invest in our volunteer programming in Steele County, we were able to accommodate all three of these asks. We received $13,500, and with this funding, we were able to start Volunteers United, the volunteer recruiting, training, and capacity building network of caring individuals in Steele County. We brought on 119 volunteers and over 1,000 hours of service just during the 9-month grant period. The volunteer rate back in April of 2021 was listed at $28.54 per hour. That means that the initial investment of $13,500 had only allowed us to create the infrastructure to meet this increased need derived from this global pandemic, but allowed us to invest over $28,000 of volunteer time back into the community. And it didn't stop there. In 2021, by year end, we had logged over 1,500 hours or $42,810 of health, education, and financial stability in our community. This program continues today with new volunteers increasing the capacity of our nonprofits to fill the human services gaps in our community. Our success story I would like to share from this program that would never existed if it hadn't been for MAVA is that one of our volunteers learned the skills that she needed as a volunteer to secure a better paying position that what she had with the nonprofit organization that she was volunteering for. So she became an employee. Economic mobility at its finest, all because MAVA felt that a small county in greater Minnesota deserved a chance to make a huge impact on the people of our community.
Thank you, Ms. Newberry, for contributing that testimony from Ms. Duncan. I see that we have Carmeet Bowman with us. Ms. Bowman, would you like to testify? Please introduce yourself for the record and then continue with your testimony.
Yes, thank you, Chair Schultz, members of the committee. I'm Carmeet Bowman. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Alliance for Volunteer Advancement. And thank you for taking the time to seriously consider this bill. I'm sure you're aware that volunteers have been lifesavers during the pandemic. There's been much pandemic-related suffering, and volunteers have become a safety net for those most harmed by COVID-19. You've already heard and will hear more how volunteers have risked their own lives to provide rides to medical appointments, deliver food and medical supplies, visited homebound seniors and those with disabilities. Volunteers have also worked with at-risk youth, prevented suicide, and worked tirelessly to address homelessness. During the pandemic, many Minnesota basic needs organizations relied heavily upon volunteers to serve as frontline workers, providing food and other basic needs. Some nonprofits, however, such as medical clinics, had to furlough volunteers, and some used virtual volunteering to address unmet needs. The bottom line is that many volunteers were furloughed, resulting in a reduction of service to those most vulnerable. Organizations are telling us that now is the time to rebuild volunteerism, yet they lack the infrastructure and funding to effectively engage volunteers. Organizations need to create innovative and cost-effective volunteer engagement systems, and the bill would provide funding so that an increased number of volunteers can safely serve unmet needs in some of the most under-resourced parts of our state. You might be aware that the state had an Office of Volunteerism and Community Service. And since the closure of that state Office of Community and Volunteer Service, MAVA has picked up all of the work of that office with no state funding. In past years, Minnesota has lost significant infrastructure to promote and enhance volunteerism. The state's number of regional volunteer centers decreased from 13 to 2, and no state funds have been allocated directly to sustaining, building, and expanding volunteerism in Minnesota since 2002. Many communities, particularly in Greater Minnesota, lack a pharmacy, a grocery store, other health-related resources. And through the volunteers, these same communities are seeing and addressing this unmet need. But the volunteers need support and structure and some funds. Volunteers are not free. So House File 1383, the volunteerism bill, is a lifesaver bill. Volunteers have been lifesavers throughout the pandemic, and without them, many basic needs organizations wouldn't be able to do their work. So I know you all believe in the power of volunteerism, and I'm glad that we've got some people here today to share some real life stories, the heart-tugging stories of volunteer impact. So I'd like to thank you all for giving us the hearing, for considering House File 1383, and there's a lot of work to be done, and I think we know that this is a small investment that results in empowering so many people to do right by their communities. So thank you so much for the time. And are there other testifiers?
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Bowman. We got started a little earlier than we thought. So we did go to other testifiers. And I have one question for you. When in 2002, when the Office of Community and Volunteer Services was decommissioned or eliminated, do you recall what the budget was for that office?
I did some research around that, and the budget varied annually. And what I found, and you know, I could be wrong, is there were about 4 or 5 staff, and it was about $500,000 per year. And this was ongoing for a number of years. So clearly, from a budgetary standpoint, this one-time allocation at this point is a lot more cost-effective than bringing back the Minnesota Office of Volunteerism and Community Service.
Thank you, Ms. Bowman. It looks like we have a question from Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Kegel and to the testifiers. So I am interested in this bill. I've been an active community volunteer, and the value of this in our communities is so important. But I do have some concerns about the actual language of the bill. So it was referenced earlier that 10% of the grant would go towards admin expenses, and that is not in the language. Nothing is addressing admin in there. And secondly, there's no real reporting requirements. It says that the MAVO shall report data on outcomes from the subgrants and recommendations. But to me, that's not clear enough. I think when we're giving out state money to a variety of small nonprofits, we need to button that up and make sure that we know who got the money, what it was used for. And I also think it really builds capacity in nonprofits to require them to have better reporting. So if this does go forward, I hope Representative Kegel, you'll consider some amendments friendly, but to strengthen how this would work in practice. Thank you.
Representative Kegel, would you like to respond?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Robbins. I am always down for better reporting. And I, you know, having gone through the Service Enterprise program with MAVA, I know that that is a big component of the capacity building within MAVA, is being able to show that reporting and show your outcomes. And not just with numbers and, you know, dollars, but I think one of the biggest things is the stories from not only the volunteers, but the people that they're volunteering with. And so measuring outcomes is great, but I also think, you know, we need to kind of take a little bit of a bigger approach too when looking at those reports. And yeah, as far as the administrative stuff, I am more than willing to work with you to make sure that we're being good stewards of state dollars.
Thank you, Representative Kegel. Any other follow-up, Representative Robbins?
No, thank you, Madam Chair.
And I will look into how that's specified in legislative language in terms of overhead expenses. I will check with Mr. Berg. Unless we do have Ms. Sommerfeld here from DHS, if she had wanted to comment on the administrative overhead. That's typical for these types of grants. Ms. Sommerfeld?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know if you can see or hear me yet. Again, for the record, I'm Jennifer Sommerfeld from the Department of Human Services. We probably will request a fiscal note so we can take a look at the costs on this. I don't have any information right now on what that might be or if there are costs. We don't know for sure. So.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Sommerfeld. Mm-hmm. We do have another testifier with us. Dana Thewis, are you here and able to testify?
I am here. I would love to testify.
Excellent. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Dana Thewis. I'm the program coordinator for Community Partners in Two Harbors. And what we do, Madam Chair and members of the committee, we serve people and caregivers who are 60 plus with services to help them remain in their homes independently as long as they're safely able to do so. We do that through a number of services: grocery shopping and delivery, transportation and medical appointments, and friendly phone calls are kind of our three biggest services. Through a collaboration in Two Harbors, we provide the volunteers for Meals on Wheels. So Monday through Fridays, we serve or we deliver about 59 meals each day to homebound seniors. Some of our seniors have told us, one lady in particular, she receives extra meals during the week because otherwise she'd be eating eggs for breakfast and peanut butter sandwiches for lunch and dinner. And so she relies on these meals heavily because she is unable to go to the store herself. And our local grocery store, especially when COVID hit, has been very overwhelmed. They don't have the ability to provide delivery or curbside service. So that was something that we started in 2019, just before COVID, but then it really exploded in 2020. Right now, we have six volunteers who regularly, every week, they shop for seven different seniors. A couple of these pairs have been matched up since March of 2020. it's great when they're able to get to know the person's list and they can really get them the things they need. And then they also recognize when something they need isn't available, why it's necessary. One of our volunteers has gone to the hardware store in town to get cotton balls because the grocery store was out of them. And he knew that the person who requests them that he shops for uses them when he's doing his insulin checks. Those one-to-one relationships are really key with our volunteers. Our staff doesn't have the capacity to put in that time with the number of services we provide. Transportation is a really high need in our service area, in our rural area. Recently, we had a volunteer who provided a ride from Two Harbors to Ely because a person was working with Lake County and had been temporarily housed here in Two Harbors because he had no heating. And once he was ready, once his home was ready for him to go back, he didn't have transportation. So our volunteer drove him from Two Harbors back to Ely, and it actually ended up happening 2 weeks in a row. And so our organization does provide small fuel cards or small amounts for our volunteers, but we really can't cover the full cost, especially on a ride from Two Harbors to Ely. That is a lot more than what we can afford, but those rides are still very necessary. Another volunteer has provided regular rides to the same participant to cancer treatment since May of 2020. A friend had been providing rides to this person, but after COVID, the friend's doctor said you can't do any volunteer rides because of other health concerns. You need to stay home. And so this participant who still needed to get to his cancer treatments didn't have a person available. His family's in the Twin Cities. So we had a volunteer who used to drive about once a week. And he said during COVID, he said, I understand the risks, but I'm willing to drive when you need me. I know that this is a necessary thing. So he's now been doing that for almost 2 years. Every ride that this participant has, I just contact that volunteer directly. It keeps them safe by only by interacting with just each other. So they're both limiting their interactions otherwise. And then this person gets their needed medical rides. In the last 2 years, the volunteer has done over 200 hours of transportation for just that participant. Thank you for your time. We really rely on our volunteers to keep these necessary services to our community members.
Well, thank you, Ms. Lewis, for all the work you're doing. And please, from all of us, thank your volunteers for us. Sounds like they're doing amazing work and really bringing vital food and services to members of your community. So we really appreciate our volunteers. We have one last testifier with us today. We have Karen Pfeiffer. Please introduce yourself to the committee and then proceed with your testimony.
Hi, I am Karen Pfeiffer. I am the West Community Health Manager for Essentia Health. Thank you for having me here today. I'm excited to share part of our story. And my role really is to work with our communities in West Central Minnesota to identify what are the top needs. We do that through extensive research and data analysis and looking at what is it that is really affecting people's ability to be well. And then our job is to go and figure out how to leverage volunteers and people and resources and communities to make a difference and improve well-being. And I'm going to share a lot with you today about our story in Becker County, because I think it's just a great example of how the power of volunteerism truly makes a difference, not just for individuals, but in transforming communities and actually leveraging economic development. So 3 years ago, we started a project in the community of Frazee. Frazee has 1,200 people. It's a very small community. There's a limited business district. And we noted that out of the entire county, the students there had the highest rate of depression, with about 47% of eighth graders experiencing depression within the last 30 days, which is significant, of course. And in addition to that, we also noted that it was almost 30% of them had thoughts about suicidality within the last 30 days. And so we knew that we needed to work with that community and try to make a difference. And so my role was to engage the community, build volunteerism base, and bring people together to identify, number one, why is this happening? What is causing that rate to be so high? And what needs to be different in the community, in the school, and in people's lives so that we can improve that? And over the last 3 years, by engaging in that process, we have done a multitude of things, but we've engaged over 200 volunteers, over 1,500 volunteer hours, and we've leveraged about $1.3 million. And for a very small town, that's a lot of money, right? And not only have we done that, but we've seen this social capital build, which is now building economy, and we're seeing a lot of changes happen. And so one of the things, there was quite a few things that the students and community noted about why this was happening, why the rate of depression was so high. And really what the kids said was, there's nowhere for them to be outside of school and nobody cares about them. Like, that was their number one answer. And they also said that there was limited activities, both physical activities and especially art. And so we worked with the community and the city and the Lions Club, and we put in Frisbee golf in one of the parks. We started an after-school art program with the 4-H, 4-H and also with community volunteers. And we started investing in more community activities. So we had over 40 kids involved in our Merry Christmas celebration and decorating Christmas trees across the community to work on beautification. We launched a youth council to give more youth in our community decision-making and engage them in designing the community and activities they want to live and experience. And then we have developed, we're almost there, in developing a community and youth center. And the community and youth center is going to do multiple things. It will provide that safe space for students in our community to have a place to be, to go and be in a positive environment. It will also have a maker space. So kids and community will be able to engage in developing workforce skills as well as art and other things together, and also enhance creative skills. There will also be a coffee shop and bistro, which was a need identified in one of the community needs assessments from 2019. And there will be a small retail space that will enhance entrepreneurialism of student art projects and community members. It'll provide 4 new jobs for the community. And we have, like I said, hundreds of volunteers. We have raised over about $800,000 for that project, primarily all local. And it's been just an incredible undertaking that has been 100% volunteer driven. We don't have paid staff at this time. And so it's just been an incredible community effort. And over the last 3 years, by doing that and engaging those volunteers in that way, we've seen already a 15% improvement in the percent of youth that are experiencing mental well-being. And we also looked at the percent of youth that feel adults care about them in the community, and that also improved by 11%. Because of the community collaboration, we were also eligible for a grant for the school where we implemented the Positive Community Norms project. And that additionally added 2 more jobs in the community and brought in 2 more staff, people who are leading an entire effort around positivity and addressing substance use. And so the power of leveraging volunteers has impacted the people specifically. We have a youth who tells her story of how this is making a difference because she feels like a member of her community now. And 3 years ago, she was significantly struggling. We see it on the individual level. We see it, the impact to the school, and we see the impact in the community. And so by investing in people to be able to organize and bring people together and really create change, we're making a difference on so many different areas. And so I just want to encourage you that the return on investment is really high when we can do this work, and ask for your support. And so I just want to say thank you for having me today.
Thank you, Ms. Pfeiffer, for sharing that really compelling experience, and thank you for doing all of that work. It really shows how important social capital is and making sure people have that social engagement with others for their mental health. I think that is all for the testifiers for this bill. Representative Cagle, do you have any closing comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to all of the folks who came and testified and shared their stories. I think that's, not much more needs to be said. So I just really hope that we can get this into our final bill. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative Cagle. I'm not seeing any other questions from members. So members, House File 1383 as amended will be laid over for possible inclusion in the Human Services Finance Bill. So members, that is all that we have for today. We will be meeting tomorrow, the 16th, and we're going to be hearing a presentation from DHS giving us updates on all the work they're doing on home and community-based services. And then we'll get an update on the Age-Friendly Minnesota work that's going on across the state. So members, with that, we are adjourned. Everybody have a great day and have fun studying the maps. Bye-bye.